Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. Benedict XVI has increasingly been attentive to issues connected to climate change, often speaking of the environment, of the safeguard of creation. As his spokesman, Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi, said last week here on Vatican Radio, some have even begun referring to him as the Green Pope, il Papa Verde.
Qualcuno comincia a chiamarlo il Papa Verde. Effettivamente nel magistero di Benedetto XVI i pronunciamenti sulla tutela dell'ambiente, sulla salvaguardia del creato sono frequenti.
In this context, Father Lombardi remarked how the Holy Father offers a framework of solid religious reference, both rational and moral, for efficient action and new lifestyles adapted to responsible development. Themes Benedict XVI also expresses concern for in his recent encyclical Caritas in Veritate. And themes on the agenda in a special way this week in New York, as the United Nations summit, which began on Tuesday, 22nd of September, focused precisely on the effects of climate change. A summit convened by this international body's Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, in an effort to bring to the attention of heads of state and government the need for urgent action, as well as mobilize the highest level political will needed to reach a fair, effective, and scientifically ambitious global climate deal at the United Nations Climate Change Conference due in Copenhagen this December. While this summit is taking place, among those already fighting the effects of climate change on the ground is Oxfam, the Oxford Committee for Famine Relief, which provides simple, effective solutions to the crisis, which is already affecting millions of poor people worldwide. Emma McCarthy spoke to a senior policy advisor at Oxfam, Robert Bailey, asking him in particular about the effects of climate change in one of the poorest countries of the world, Bangladesh.
Well, Bangladesh is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's described as a least developed country. But not only is it one of the poorest countries in the world, it's also one of the most exposed to the effects of climate change. A lot of Bangladesh is at a very low height above sea level. And at the moment, sea levels are rising much faster than scientists originally predicted as a result of climate change. And Oxfam in its programs in Bangladesh is already seeing the impacts of this on poor people's lives. For example, the vulnerable island of Chaitra in Bangladesh is experiencing now increasingly unpredictable flooding and erratic weather, and it's struggling to cope with the rising sea levels that climate change is causing. The result of this for people is spending more and more time every year in waterlogged homes and waterlogged villages. It's leading to the spread of waterborne diseases such as diarrhea and dysentery. It's leading to crop failures. It's leading to illness and, in some cases, death. And what Oxfam is doing is it's working with partners in the region to raise homes above water levels and to help raise agricultural land and cattle onto higher ground so that the floodwaters don't reach them. It's working with communities to educate them about flood response and to build new latrines and tube wells to help people get access to clean water. But ultimately, these kinds of measures are not going to be enough because the scientists are now predicting that on our current course, sea levels will have risen by about a meter by the end of this century. And that could mean about 17% of Bangladesh being underwater, affecting probably something like 40 million people. So really, the kinds of interventions that Oxfam and its partners are working on at the moment will be nothing more than Band-Aids in a scenario like that. And that is precisely why we need to see at least $50 billion a year of new and additional funds for adaptation flowing from rich countries to poor countries today. And that money has to be additional. That has to be in addition to existing aid commitments. And what we're seeing at the moment from a lot of rich countries is that they're trying to wiggle out of their obligations, and they're saying that this money can be met from existing aid budgets. But if that happens, all that they will be doing is taking money away from projects to build schools, to fund clinics, to fund access to antiretroviral drugs. And so the result for poor people will be catastrophic if we take money for adaptation away from aid budgets. In fact, Oxfam has calculated that if the costs of funding adaptation, which we think are about $50 billion a year, if that was to come from existing aid commitments, then the impact could be really quite frighteningly bad. The result could be 4.5 million extra children dying. It could mean 75 million fewer children in school, and it could mean 8.6 million fewer people having access to critical antiretroviral treatments. What we need to see coming out of the G20 in Pittsburgh at the end of this month is a commitment from the international community to finance adaptation at a scale that is adequate and commensurate with the task at hand. There needs to be a political commitment from industrialized country leaders to set up a new international adaptation fund, which would raise about $50 billion a year in the first instance and distribute it to the poorest countries to help them adapt to climate change. The types of things the money would be spent on should be up to the developing countries themselves to identify, because the needs of each country are going to be different. As I've mentioned, Bangladesh, which is a very low-lying country, will have a lot of money to spend on investing against floods, investing in early warning systems, raising infrastructure and housing above sea levels. In other countries, what they may want to do is invest in new forms of agriculture, which are more drought resistant and require less water. The types of interventions are going to vary from one country to another, because the way climate change affects countries depends on the climate in the region, the geography, and various other factors.
A lot of people in the current global financial crisis are saying, particularly in first world countries, well, we have problems with even getting people into employment. Why should we be worrying about flooding in Bangladesh or drought in sub-Saharan Africa? You know, if they can't fend for themselves at this point, you know, why should we become globally aware that this is an issue that's going to involve all of us?
I think there are two answers to that question. First thing to note is that $50 billion a year sounds a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it really isn't. Rich countries have mobilized about $18 trillion over the last couple of years to bail out their financial sectors and stimulate their own economies. Global military spending runs at about $1.5 trillion every year. So $50 billion for adaptation is absolute peanuts. And when you look at the lives that depend on this money, and the number of lives and livelihoods that will be saved, it really does look like a good price to me. It's about 0.1% of industrialized country GDP. The second point to note is that all the economic modeling suggests that investing early in adaptation is a very good economic strategy, because investing in flood defenses, investing in new models of agriculture and food production, et cetera, these things will massively, massively, massively reduce the long-term costs of climate change if we invest early. Another important factor to bear in mind is that unless we get this money flowing into developing countries so that they are able to adapt to climate change, so that livelihoods aren't going to be destroyed, so that people aren't forced into migration, then unless we see these investments happening now, the implications for climate refugees, for migration, for political and economic stability in the world could really be quite dire. So it represents a good investment on a number of different levels, I think.
You were listening there to Senior Policy Advisor at Oxfam, Robert Bailey, speaking to Emma McCarthy. Our thanks to both of them. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.